and welcome back for Recruitment 101 podcast. And today joining me, I have Kaylee and Tanisha. Why don't we go straight ahead and you two introduce yourselves.
So I'm Tanisha and I head up the HR and compliance team at Skills Alliance. I've been with the company now for over 6 years.
I'm Kaylee, I'm Global HR Manager for Skills Alliance and I've been here for almost 2 years now.
That's flown. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Both of you, that's flown. So we are here today to talk about neurodiversity in the workplace. So obviously neurodiversity is now a really large part of the working environment and it comes up more than one would expect. So can you talk to me about the advantages of having a neurodiverse workforce?
Yeah, so I would say increased creativity and innovation is one. So a diverse workforce provides diversity of thought, which will result in creativity and innovation, which is going to be an advantage for any business. Neurodivergent people quite literally think differently. So this is the crux of neurodiversity. You know, it's a difference of wiring in the brain. So it's important that we use this. Because a neurodiverse team are more likely to see issues from, you know, different perspectives. And then there's also the social justice case for just eliminating inequality in general in the workplace. So that will see that managers have more of a moral obligation to treat all employees with fairness, you know, respect, and that treating people fairly should be seen as an end in itself and not just as a means to an end.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nicely put.
Yeah, that was very nicely put. Do you have anything to add?
Not on that point. I think we've covered most of the bases. The only thing that I would probably touch on is well-being in the workplace.
Yeah.
So I think if an organisation's ethos is one of inclusion and acceptance, it's likely that they will have happier and healthier employees.
Mm-hmm.
When an employee feels comfortable and confident, then they're more likely to be productive and satisfied and will stay longer in a role.
Mm-hmm.
At Skills Alliance, we create a supportive environment which accommodates for every employee's needs, whether they're neurodiverse or they're not, which hopefully increases the focus, creativity and their job satisfaction as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably one of our main aims, and we're quite big on well-being in the company.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, I feel like we're really big on well-being.
Absolutely, we push a lot.
Yeah, we've got our well-being day as well. Yeah, that we do.
So there's one thing about well-being, I guess, which I guess ties into neurodiversity, and I think there's a slight confusion, I would say, and a difference. So people often think mental health and neurodiversity are linked, but they're two different things. In short, someone who is neurodivergent doesn't mean to say that they will have a mental health condition.
Mm-hmm.
However, there's studies that show that autistic individuals may have mental illness, and it can be quite common. Especially with the extra pressures for neurodivergent people to navigate in a world shaped for neurotypicals. It seems likely to contribute to a greater likelihood of mental health being affected.
Mm. Oh, I mean, we do so much for both aspects, yeah. Not just, we do stuff for neurodiversity and for mental health, so we kind of tie everything together.
And especially where myself and Kaylee are both mental health first aiders as well, and we...
Yeah.
We'll often sit down and have one-to-ones with individuals regardless.
Yes, you say you do a good drop-in session.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like everyone here is looked after.
Yeah.
By the two of you.
Got every area.
Divide and conquer. So, obviously at Skills Alliance, we have had management training in neurodiversity recently. Can you walk me through it? Walk me through the training.
So, yeah, so we've always kind of encouraged, you know, a neurodiverse workforce and wanting managers to feel that they're able to support this and manage those individuals properly. But we identified that we did have a gap in our training because what we would kind of originally do is just go on a case-by-case basis when something came up. but we wanted to set an internal standard and give managers more initial confidence in their own abilities. And we actually have, after we've just done a survey, 10% of our workforce is neurodiverse.
That's crazy.
Yeah, wow. So it was clearly the right choice to do the training. So we kind of started with looking at what outcomes we wanted the managers to achieve by the end of the training, which was to understand what neurodiversity is, understand how neurodiversity can be managed in the workplace, and understand the strategies involved, which, you know, we had to upskill ourselves to do this. So it was kind of a lot of reading books, listening to webinars and stuff like that to put the training together.
I remember when that was happening, you were deep in a book.
I knew it in the back of my hand.
Yeah.
So the training was interactive and discussion focused in smaller groups. So we mainly focused on four of the neurodiversities: dyslexia, dyspraxia, ADHD, and autism, mainly because those are the most common in general and they were the most common ones that came up in Skills Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
So we looked at strengths and challenges. So it was good to show managers misconceptions and myths around neurodiversity, and was also really positive to shine a light on how many strengths neurodiverse employees actually have and how they can be used.
Well, I mean, I didn't even know the difference between some of them before the training.
Exactly. And a lot of people thought, you know, mental health conditions were neurodiverse conditions, which they can be. But, you know, there's a lot of nuances that people didn't realise before. But we wanted to keep the training broad and show our managers that just a willingness to be highly person-centric and have an increased understanding of neurodiversity can lead to a perspective shift in their management style. So, you know, all employees fit somewhere on the human spectrum of neurodiversity. So it follows that, you know, each employee is going to have their own strengths, challenges, their own preferences. It was good for the managers to see that they can support neurodiverse employees, but also by just having a very person-centric management style, they're then covering all employees. That's kind of how all employees should ideally be managed anyway.
So
it was beneficial.
I mean, I remember when we were doing that training and I realised some of these neurodivergent traits are actually really handy in recruitment. being hyper-organised sometimes things like this.
Even the hyper-focus as well. We'll have some of our top billers, they may come from a neurodivergent background, and it's often that they will hyper-focus on something which in aid helps us, and it's a big, it's huge for us.
And that's why it was important to look at it and for managers to see that the strengths from neurodiverse employees can most of the time outweigh the challenges that they might actually have, and you can really get the best from those employees.
So just touching on disclosing a condition, so we have kind of an open channel, and I think where we've had the training now, it allows managers, we can't obviously diagnose anyone, but it allows managers to have that open conversations with their employees. We discussed during our training how employees can disclose if they have a condition. So it's often that employees won't disclose before they've obviously been recruited for a role, and often we might not know in their first weeks or even their first months of joining with us. That might be that some employees choose not to disclose their condition, which is completely fine, but it can be the case that if they do disclose their condition, we can put practices in place to actually help their condition. And it's not to highlight the fact that they have a condition, but to also just aid them and give them the best resources to be able to strive in their role. So some individuals may fear that if they disclose that they have a condition, they may be thought as being lazy or making excuses for their performance. And I think that's probably one of the key things with disclosing any condition, is that they don't want that to be a hindrance on their performance.
It could be a big advantage.
So it's important for our managers to understand that it's a domino effect, essentially, and the more inclusive we are with neurodiverse individuals and show them that we're prepared and have safe environments, it's more likely that other neurodiverse employees will disclose that.
Definitely. So what are the benefits of, you know, I know we've slightly touched on this already, but what are the benefits of training, particularly management in this area? Are there sort of different strategies for each neurodiverse trait, or is it something that sort of all gets pinpointed together?
So interviews is one of the steps. So we have an amazing talent team who take candidates through the whole of our interview process here at Skills Alliance. They will speak to candidates from the point of receiving their CV to understanding their key strengths, and then they go through the interview questions with them to be able to help candidates showcase their best skills when they present to us. You have a lot of very capable people who communicate differently, who may approach work differently, and therefore they may not be getting jobs and are not able to retain jobs, but they're very capable in performing. So a conventional interview is often principally a test of recall and social competence. This form of assessment can put some neurodivergent people at a disadvantage, making it harder for them to demonstrate the skills and aptitudes required to do the job role in question. So I think one of the key things that we stand out at Skills is having that one-to-one and bespoke support from our talent team. So yeah, that's something that we're quite proud of.
I also think, I guess, with the benefits from the management training is just making the managers feel as ready and as supported for all situations as possible. So we really wanted to focus on the fact that there may be, you know, some similarities between employees who share the same neurodiversity, but a constant theme throughout the training was that each individual is going to have different requirements in order to excel. So another benefit, you know, of the training is to just make them aware of what the organisation can offer and what sort of adjustments might be needed. So when I did my research, I read a report that said 60% of employees are worried about getting support wrong, like in terms of managers. And they're unsure about where to find information on how to support their team. So we looked into putting a bit more of like a formal process together for managers to kind of look at when thinking about reasonable adjustments for neurodiverse employees. So there's some changes that managers can make which will reduce or remove a disadvantage related to someone's disability. So we kind of came up with a three-step system of listen, act, and outcome. So listen would be like, you know, try to understand how their disability affects them personally. You know, don't just make assumptions, consider their specific situation and what their job role is. Act is then, you know, employees should take lead from the person, make adjustments. And also, this isn't something that's a one-time event. It could be that it's trial and error. Something that's working now in a few months' time might not work, or it doesn't work to begin with, and then ultimately the outcome. We do have a responsibility to make reasonable adjustments, but obviously in some situations they can't be made. It depends what the person's requesting, but it's just about having open communication, talking it through with the employee, and try and come to some solution of how you can support them.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've chatted to a couple of people that here that are neurodiverse, and they all seem so happy with the management, particularly after this training that you hosted. Yeah, it's, so it's all working. It's good. It's great to hear. So obviously you've just been saying that, you know, we can't make every adjustment, but how do we go about making some of these adjustments in the workplace effective?
I think it's key to touch on what we have in the resources that we use on a day-to-day basis, which is our written communication. Many autistic people would prefer written communication, such as emails or text or chat, to speaking over the phone.
That's so interesting. Yeah. I had no idea about that.
The reason for that is that written communication can be easily referred back to, and there is still time for processing information and structuring a response. Whereas if we have a phone call or something that's like in front of us, it doesn't allow them the time to actually process that information, which is quite key. And that's not just the same, that's not the case just for autistic people. I think that's the case for anyone. They have different styles of communication, and it's understanding what the different styles of communication is and what suits that person best. needing additional time to process information, misreading similar looking words. So if someone's sending over an email, it may be the case that a word to them would be written in a different way, so we just need to be mindful.
You could either end up really badly, you could read it wrong and be like,
Making things as like, you know, ambiguous wording stuff like that can often be unhelpful.
So it's important that written communication is clear and to the point, so that there's nothing that can be misconstrued in that point as well. I think it's important to give employees sufficient time to read and respond to written materials as well. So don't expect a response within 5 minutes. Allow the employee to take that information away and to process it. Ensure that if there's meetings, if you can book meetings well within advanced, I think that, and set agendas for meetings as well, that would allow them the time again to process that information and to prepare, rather than going into a meeting like blind, essentially. So I think this would all enable employees to process and make sense of the information. It also encourages more meaningful discussions at the meeting itself if the written materials are given out during a meeting or briefing. So just make sure that we're clear and don't expect an immediate response. So I might process information differently to Kaylee, for instance. She might be able to like think on the spot. It's usually when we're dealing with things with Excel, Kaylee can go away and like type a formula or calculate a percentage, but I might need some more time to process that information. Stick to the important information, remove any information that isn't relevant. So if we're talking about a podcast and we're talking about neurodivergent individuals, make sure that it's clear to the point and we're not delving into mental health or well-being, and it's just very focused. And that's, I think,
direct.
I think it's as well just understanding and accepting that not all employees are going to behave the same way. So it's also, obviously, it's in the technical side of the role, but also many, you know, neurodiverse employees are going to find it difficult to socialize with colleagues in typical ways, and just, you know, generally how they are in the office may be different to, I don't know, majority of other people in the office. And just because, you know, an individual chooses not to join in to social events, or maybe doesn't engage in, you know, the social chit chat in the office, it doesn't affect their ability to do their job well. So it's just making sure that people aren't biased towards that.
I feel like we're such an accepting lot here, that it really does help.
I think, you know, people kind of take people for what they are, don't they? Embrace each other.
Just touching on the reasonable adjustments as well, it's not just about written communication. It could be about software. It could be a piece of tech that enables someone to, like, transcripts or something that can aid their work. And I think it's important that we've got a really good HR team that would look into systems and tech.
I mean, even headphones sometimes, like the noise
cancelling. The noise cancelling headphones, exactly.
And I think we do provide that. You know, some people, instead of typing up notes, they've used, you know, Otter AI, where they're able to have that written up for them. And we've got a wellbeing room where if you need, you know, if you've got an admin hour and you just need to focus, you can do that also. I do think another important aspect is to make sure that managers are taking the time to actively listen to those employees. Every manager and employee, you know, will eventually fall into some kind of unproductive communication pattern, but it's important to step back sometimes, especially if a manager is, you know, having a situation with a neurodiverse employee. So I think showing you're listening just by, you know, encouraging, avoiding saying too much, you know, trying to maybe paraphrase at the end to make sure you've fully understood them.
Yeah.
And I think when managers have those one-to-ones, especially if maybe someone was disclosing a condition, it's important to avoid distractions, which I think when times are busy can be quite hard. You know, people normally just pull each other on the floor or run into an office room. But if someone, you know, is trying to express to you that they're struggling with something, maybe as an aspect of the fact that they're neurodiverse, it's important, you know, to put your phone away, avoid clock watching, or just be aware of internal distractions that could make you wander, because for you it might seem like they're just expressing that they're struggling, but for them this might be the first time that they've actually disclosed this.
Perfectly summarised. Thank you. You already summarised. There's quite a lot of detail there. So obviously, I feel like we've touched upon, you know, everything that we've probably missed things out because we do so much.
Such a big topic.
But I feel like we've touched upon, you know, the training that we offer, the, you know, the way we accommodate people and how it affects office environment. Either of you two have anything to add for the final? Closing statements, if you will.
I suppose now we've done this, it's just about ensuring that we're actually
keeping it up
and streamlining it into all of our processes. That's kind of our end goal now, to make sure that every step of like the employee life cycle we're considering this. So even in training, when people, you know, come in, there can be a discussion around this, because obviously we've said, as we've said, it's fine if people don't disclose, but the goal is for them to disclose, because, you know, they should be accepted and we should be able to support them. So if we can make it easier for them to disclose earlier and feel comfortable, that's kind of what we'll be looking at.
I think the earlier that they disclose is where we would be able to offer the support for them.
I feel like having such an open, nice environment is probably gonna encourage
And just having it discussed more, because if it's, you know, if people
so it's
are
not
like,
taboo to
if, people, if people know that other people are neurodiverse, there's neurodiverse management training, it's like, oh, this place doesn't mind
that. It's less like, ooh, we can't mention that. Much less taboo. Well, thanks both of you for joining me today on Recruitment 101. And thanks, viewers, for listening, I suppose listeners for listening. And join us next time for the next episode of Recruitment 101.